Morning. It is great to see everyone here today. My energy level is rising. Boy, we had a big event last night, and when I see a lot of people, it gets moving quick. I love that story. At first glance, I look at it and I thought, well, this has to do with someone reaching out to the rejected. It has to do with somebody that just kind of left their comfort zone and went out there to the streets. But when he left his comfort zone, now he is quite honestly at risk of being rejected. Are you kidding me? You do what with your profession? Well, I'm not going to get my hair cut by you. I mean, you're dealing with homeless folks. It's an interesting video, an interesting take. And I love the fact that he's not afraid, don't you? He's like, this is a need. And did you see the look on the faces of that? Constance, thanks for sending that video out this week. In fact, I did research. There's about 5 or 6 really good videos on this guy's background, how he lives his life unselfishly. Very, very cool. Hard to choose which one to show, but when she put that one to our team this week, I went nuts over it. It's like, whoa, I need that. And good morning. Welcome to all of you. Welcome to Catalina if you're visiting. My name's Andrew. This is our 10:30 service, and a welcome to all of our online listeners. I got some great emails this week. We're hitting this series called No Fear Living. And if you want to hear past messages, you can go to our church website, and we even have an app and all that good stuff that has those links on there. But I'm moving forward today because this is a critical time in the week. There's been indicators all week long, even this morning, that this is not just a hot topic, but it's big. It's big on this island, in Avalon specifically. I'm feeling it. I have felt it, and I constantly have dealt with it before, that feeling of fear of people or feeling rejected. My wife and I, in the early 90s, right after we got married, no kids, we were working at a church which had a lot of family involved and a lot of active ministry. There was plenty going on. And we were young marrieds, and everyone jumped on top of us to say, hey, you know, what can you bring? What's your giftedness? Let's do it. And I would say that we served in every capacity you can imagine. I even directed music, helped with kids, youth. I went across the board doing a lot. My wife and I very quickly got tired. We got a little burned out, and we realized within 2 years of getting married, we needed something for our marriage. We needed something for us as young marrieds. And we were looking at the possibility of kids and, you know, what do we do with that? And we wanted to have other couples, so we decided to pray hard about what was next. And God said, it's time for you to move on, because if you stay here, you're not going to stop. And I hear your request. It's a hard one, but I want you to move on. We left that church, and it was not easy. We loved everybody there, and it was not an easy exit, and we still needed to do it. And we started to think about churches around the area, and we walked into a church. I'm in my jeans and my shirt, and my wife is very comfortably dressed too. We walked in the door, and we were greeted with stares. I mean, they were looking us down from my shoes to my hair. Everything about the way we looked, you could cut it like a knife. You could feel it. That was my greeting. We sat down towards the back, and we were on the side. This was not a huge congregation, maybe about 140, 150 people was what we saw. So we knew we'd jump into a church like that real quick. But the pastor starts acknowledging several couples that are visiting, and we're sitting right there, and I actually knew the pastor, and he completely skipped over my wife and I. Nothing was said. And then they had a greeting time, you know, like Reed did earlier, where stand up, let's all greet each other for a minute or two. And we just stood there. No one came over. And I was like, this is dumb. I'm gonna go shake some hands. But very quickly, I noticed people were just kind of scurrying like mice. It was awkward. We left there and said, man, we are never going back there again. It was hard. We thought God was directing us in a certain church, but when we started trying them out, we were 0-for-1. And then I sat back going, maybe my attitude sucks. Maybe I'm thinking in terms of what's in it for me, and I need to show up and be a little more giving, a little more generous, and not worry about those things. But very quickly, I looked at what was happening because we visited another church, and it was the exact opposite. The exact opposite. But before that visit, right after the first failure, when things were really shocking, I remember going to the beach with my family, and we loved a certain playground that was near a pizza place we went to, and it was kind of like what you did with young kids, and I remember just having fun with them on this beach playground. And I watched them, and I was like, I was pushing them on the swings, doing dad stuff, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, forget this, I'm on the swing. And we're having a blast, and I mean, we're just going at it, and I noticed, there goes Maddie, she jumps, there goes Grace, she jumps, and I'm like, I'm doing this. And I went airborne, and I decided I'm going all out. And within a few minutes, I was one of the kids. I was having the time of my life. And as far as I was concerned, I could care less who's looking at me for a minute or two. And then all of a sudden, I noticed everybody was looking at me. There was this wall that went around the playground to keep the little ones from coming out so parents could supervise it better. And there was a line of adults all watching and all kind of talking and poking. I didn't feel like I was a failure. I landed my jump, but I felt rejected. All of a sudden, this switch went off, and Dad's not having as much fun anymore because I'm worried about who's looking at me like I'm some big kid, and I just felt awkward for a minute. I remember that knee-jerk reaction, and I pulled back, and my kids were like, Dad, what's going on? I mean, relax. You were having fun a minute ago, and Shelly, who was making the pictures, like, you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm fine, you know. Just an awkward feeling, even as a parent. And so that little self-discovery time in the early 90s, in my marriage, who am I? What are people looking at? A time of posing, but also a time of fear. It was all kicking in. I thought, maybe I should get out of here. Maybe I should stop creating this memory with my kids. All kinds of stuff. Maybe I should stop enjoying this moment because all these adults are staring at me with their cappuccinos and they're pointing at me and, you know, I just felt stupid. But my kids thought, Dad, this was the bomb. What happened? Where'd you go? That story is important this morning because, oddly enough, it took place on a playground. And I talk about how the earth has been created by God to have a blast like a playground. He says, go nuts in my trees, climb them, build tree houses. He says, please have fun in my ocean. It's dangerous. Be cautious. Take calculated risks, but get down there. You won't believe what I've created for you. By the way, if you haven't noticed my mountains, hello, here's a trail. Get out there. Blaze it. Be a kid. Go all out. I remember a great speaker at Ransom Heart talk about this lab dog that broke out of a neighborhood and went straight for the beach and was running up and down this beach, just chasing seagulls and having the time of his life, right next to a huge sign that said, no dogs allowed on the beach. A true lab. But I'll give strength to that. I will give strength to that rejection. It happens. It even happens in church. I look around and, you know, there's some people, like, I dare you to reach me. And I battle it. For some reason, I let this weakness get into my brain. I let it influence me, and perfectly good strangers, though. I mean, perfectly good strangers. Some I'll never see again, or I've never met before, and all of a sudden I'm feeling this tanked feeling. It's awkward. Exactly. Last night, I had a chance with a group to revisit a group. Back when Goatee Records was going strong, and Toby Mac had a chance to talk to this guy, Mark Maher, who was a graduate of Biola University, came out of a church Christian environment. He loved his parents, but he rejected a lot of their teaching and ran off as an alcoholic and a drug addict and did his own thing. Rastafari was his life. God got a hold of him. It's a unique testimony, but God got a hold of him when he came back. And some of his friends that used to hang out with him in the Rastafari lifestyle just looked at him and said, so you're no longer Rastafarian. What are you, Christafarian? And the name stuck. 76 nations, 46 states. Toby Mac grabbed this kid and brought him along. He and his brother, actually, and they put a band together. And he was actually singing last night with his family on stage. I sat there celebrating with a very eclectic group of people. Not 8,000 like I was used to with the last time I took a group, and we were one of thousands, but maybe, 50, 60 people just crammed in front of this stage on a beach, literally on a beach in a little picnic shelter, singing praise and dancing like there was no tomorrow. And I'll be honest with you, for a second there, I thought, I don't dance like this. And that second went by. I can dance like this. Because I'm like, I have waited so long to have some gospel reggae that's not infiltrating the drug environment, hit this island and singing praise to Jesus in a very cool beat. It was neat. There's places on this island, I'm not going to mention them. There's places on this island where a lot of reggae has come and a lot of trash lives were left in the train wreck afterwards. But last night, I drove home, and it was close to midnight before it was all said and done. Reed was driving, and Matt had this group, and we just thought to ourselves, did this really happen? The enemy didn't have a chance last night. We were prayed up. But I've had other chances, and I've had other times where it's hit me. I needed last night to give me a shot in the arm, not to forget God's goodness. There's not a person in this room that has not gone through this. As a matter of fact, there are empty seats in these pews. Every service, I don't care what congregation you're from, what church you're from here on the island, but there's people here that are passing us right on the sidewalk right now. They're flying by in a golf cart right now, and they would never come here for fear of being rejected. Just their story, or what they look like, or the fact that it's such a stinking small town, everybody knows everybody, and everybody knows everything about everybody. They don't struggle with the temperature in this room. They don't struggle with breakfast that we just served downstairs and the fact that bacon's no longer on the menu. I struggle with that. They don't struggle with the fact that this is a very old building. No, they struggle with the fear of failure, and that failure is rejection. I want them here. There's a group of people in front of me right now. You're tracking with what I'm saying, and you're nodding your head. You want them here. Jesus wants them here. I can't go to that church because I have a past. I'm sure they all know about it because it's Avalon, And I walk in that building, everyone's going to stare at me because the way I'm dealing with life, or maybe it's just the pastor. He's going to judge me. It's been a while, or I keep telling him I'm going to come, and I never do. And a month later, I show up. And it's been so long since I've been to church. And on and on and on it goes with the reasons. The emotional detachment. And you know what? This is stuff that we've learned as a result. We've learned that. And I personally believe, and this was on Tuesday, God sent something right to my soul. If you can learn that, you can what? You can unlearn it. I remember when my youngest son, who's now 20 and twice my size, was just a little twerp. He was so fun. Harrison, we call him Chi. He was a little guy. And we put him in his first peewee soccer team, and they were called the Orange Crushers. They had an orange T-shirt that pretty much went down to his knees, and he just kind of, he didn't know what to do, and the coach didn't know what to do. I wish I had a picture of what he looked like in his uniform, but this is close I get. It's Doug. It's in a box somewhere. But there's this beehive, and everybody's kicking at it, and parents are just doing the worst thing possible. They're all screaming, go, kick it. And the coach is like, no, pass it. The coach is trying to coach, but there's 100 coaches. And all of a sudden, out of this group of kids, the ball squirts out, going towards the goal that we want to score on, and Harrison's in the lead. He's got a fast break, baby, and it's one-on-one. And I'm just, yeah! Go, Chi, go! And he's almost to the goal, and he looks down, and he realizes my shoe's untied, and he runs over to the sideline and says, tie my shoe, Dad. Right in the middle of the fast break. Could care less. Little baby Sayla's over here this morning, and the children are here this morning, and they're downstairs. They wipe their nose. They got food all over their face. They don't care. Kids don't. I need my shoe tied. Something changes as we get older. We start caring about how we function, how we stand, how we talk. Behavior that's learned that's not comfortable. It's not even normal. We leave what we used to be, and all of a sudden something changes there, and it's huge. If we don't unlearn it, it will show its ugly face in our relationships. How about marriage? I'm one to talk. If anybody knows me, it's my wife, and she knows when I'm posing. She can read it like a book. I think that's why I married her, even though I wouldn't admit it. It plays itself out in great friendships, in relationships, etc., all of it. Okay? Great verse. And it starts things off this morning, as it says in Proverbs, "The fear of man is a dangerous trap." I circle trap, and I would do that too if you have notes in front of you. And whether you're listening or able to pay attention to this whole message, you want those notes because you can go home and those scriptures come alive later on. And I realize there's a lot of things, a lot of distractions, but those notes are there and they're timeless. Go back to the notes. Stay in the notes. Fearing what other people think is a trap. But trusting God is safety. Last night, it was epic because we felt like we had a complete attachment to every musician that was there. It was small. It was intimate. You look around and you're with friends. Everybody's doing the same thing. You're not in a crowd of 10,000 people. It was a safe place to rock out the Cove for God. It was great. But then you head back into town or you head back into the matrix. Some of you know what I'm saying. You may punch in about 2 hours you're dealing with another crowd. That cruise ship comes in on Monday or Tuesday and it starts getting crazy. All heck breaks out. I know there's a lot of island company changes with a new system and there's people everywhere and you're trying to get them through. And I made it through Tuesday. I made it through Monday. You're exhausted. You're trapped. God says, in me, there's safety and there's rest. You can be a kid. You can relax. I remember when I went out to Toyon when I first moved here at the invite of a great friend that works there. And they have this building called the Maze. Has anyone ever been in the Maze? Raise your hand. Yeah, look around the room. That's amazing. All right. Amazing. Never mind. I went in that thing, couldn't see squat. It's pitch black. Granted, it has carpet, but I bashed my head on every wall that's in there, and I had more carpet burns than I have planned up at Machado's fake turf field up there. My arms were scraped, everything, and then I came finally towards the end of this thing where I saw a little crack in the wall where some daylight, and I just pushed it open and fell right onto the concrete out there like, I couldn't breathe. I was so hot. I've been banging around. It does the job. And that thing's been there for a long time. And it tires a lot of kids out. But as an adult, I was whipped. I remember, though, turning the wrong corner, feeling trapped. Every door. I mean, I went down something. I remember that. It's pretty epic. But I did fall out of it. The fear of man is a dangerous trap. But to trust God means safety. Here's the way out. I know your struggle. I know your story. Hobbs, listen to me. Listen to me. Andrew, this way. You're hitting your head over there. That's dangerous. I'm not going to stop you. But here's the way you're looking for. Follow me. Follow me. When the snare of rejection sets in, as I thought about you this week and I thought about this message, I listed some traps that deal with the fear of rejection, okay? These are not all of them, but I put a few in here. First of all is this one, and this is number one on my list, is we like to morph into the world's value and lifestyle. What's interesting is you'll go to school, and as much as kids want to all look different, and they all want to be different, or they want to kind of stick out in a crowd, one person has Uggs, everybody has Uggs. One person has this pair of jeans, they all get this pair of jeans. right? You know, a sports team, you know, this certain high top or cleat, and everybody's got to get these. In other words, we look just like everybody else. We're like chameleons. Instead of sticking out, and literally we forget God's designed you as an original masterpiece. Now, I'm not talking about dress here, and it's cool to have that happen. But I'm saying that instead of thinking in terms of how you've been created, we start to morph into a different lifestyle, and the sole reason we do that is the fear of rejection of others. We are carbon copies of each other because we forget God, the Creator, has made something different when He created us. We are unique, and we conform instead of going against the world and what they believe and what we've been taught. We try to fit in. And there's a fear there that the alternative might not be worth it because I'll lose some friends. I remember when FCA first started at the school, at least this recent program, it was not an easy break-in. In fact, a lot of people are hung up just on the name. And I'm like, no, you don't have to be a Christian. No, you don't have to be an athlete. Are you hungry? You may come to our club. Free food. And when you leave here, you'll be encouraged. Not pressured, but encouraged. But for a lot of people, that's not even enough. Because just to walk in that door as a student, just to walk in and say, hey, I went to this, they're going to take some heat. Or they might get questioned. How do I know that? Our leaders told me that. I had a little thing at our house, a little cookout, and they said, yeah, it's like some kind of cult or something on campus. I don't know, but some of my closest friends don't get it, and they're nervous all about it. I was like, good night. But they had the courage to come. But there was that fear of rejection in the very beginning. And the sole reason is because of others. The next one here is we lie and distort the truth. I hate this, but I'm victim. And I'm also part of this on the other end too. I don't want to be rejected. And I'm afraid that you might dislike me. And as a result, it tends to get in the way. So stories will come out and lies will come out in order to protect yourself and someone else. And that's not okay. When I turn around, I see what God's done in the lives of people and the truth that's there and the fact that they can't live in that truth. They're caught up and bound in a lie. It's very painful to watch, but people do that. The next one is it hinders our receiving and offering love. Probably the most painful of them all. This is a biggie. This happened in my ministry many times before. Actually, I wanted to leave ministry. And I almost did. And I think when I thought that ultimately I wanted to quit ministry, I had to think in terms of if God called me into this, only God should call me out of this. And that saved the thought. Otherwise, I was done. One of my closest friends in ministry, really great person, had a problem with the way that we were praying a certain way over people, trying to help them and listen for what the Holy Spirit would say. And as a group of people, maybe hear on their behalf and pray for them. We do this in our church on a regular basis. And as believers, and this one friend said, I'm sorry. That's not okay with me and other things. And as a result, that little hang up there completely left the ministry. And they were so involved, they were literally my right-hand person. We're still friends to this day. But that separation was bitter. It was hard. I didn't get it. And I just thought, this isn't worth it. I got burned. I really cared for somebody, and they burned and rejected this. And I was very, very cautious at that point. And kind of that knee-jerk reaction, I'm not going to trust anybody. And that even settled into ministry. Crazy. And what did that lead into? Well, here it is. We isolate and build up walls. That 3-foot bubble of thickness that says, thanks for getting close, but you're getting a little too close, Pastor. Or buddy. But I got this. I'm good. It's all good. Ultimately, when you fear rejection and you put those walls up, bridges don't have a chance. You understand the difference, right? Bridges to people versus a wall with someone. You build walls and you're isolated and lonely when your heart of hearts is activated and it's working out of that hard heart versus a soft heart. You're afraid someone might reject you. They might not like you for who you really are, so you build up these walls, and all of a sudden you're a lone ranger. Whoop. I've been there, and I've been there in ministry. The next one is this: I become critical. I know it says we, but I become critical. It's unfortunate. I just went to a Lecrae concert last time he was here. He's a great Christian rap artist. I bought a t-shirt. It's black with white lettering on the front, and it says Unashamed. I looked for it everywhere this morning. I really wanted to wear it. And the first thing you see when you see that shirt, a lot of people think is, oh, he's unashamed. He loves God. He's unashamed of Jesus and the gospel. I get it. But that's not what the shirt means. The artist explained, this means I'm unashamed to admit I'm just like everybody else. I'm just like everybody else. My stuff is no different than your stuff in the eyes of a perfect God. And I'm unashamed to say, I'm right there with you, man. I'm in the trenches. And I'll find that darn shirt. But it's a great story. When I'm critical, I judge. If I really, really fear rejection, I'm going to turn around. And you know what I'm going to do? Is I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to reject you first. I'm going to be critical before you can be critical. I'm going to be critical of you before you can be critical of me. That way, I did it first. And the most critical people you know, if you could get inside their soul, you'll find people going, I'm so scared of being rejected. I just wanted to reject someone first. It's protecting that mechanism inside when, quite honestly, it's broken. The next one is for those of you who are Christians. Specifically, you call yourself a follower of Jesus. If you're not, I'm thrilled out of my mind that you are here. But this doesn't apply to you. This is where this goes south real quick. You become really quiet about Christ. Because once you start getting analytical and critical and judgmental, all of a sudden, your witness is gone. You don't even care about witnessing anymore. In fact, you don't even care about creation anymore. Because you're not looking at it in terms of it revealing the personality of God. You just need to get out there and pound out some golf balls, man. I just need 100 of these. Or I need a batting cage. Or I need to swim 10 miles, or I need to, whatever it is, and you're busting it open health-wise, but the creation's not adding rest to your soul for the person who made it. And Thanksgiving for playing golf, it becomes, I just need to get out there and just get this over with, or pound out all this stuff inside me, and you're exhausted, quite honestly. You need another game after the game. I've done it. It wasn't a release. If anything, it was just a chance to get all this out, only for you to refill it again. See, it's a self-centered life. And for some people in this congregation, you know, you've known Christ for a while. You've been coming. And as a result, you can say, hey, my faith is solid, Pastor. But for whatever reason, you fear being rejected by other people, so you keep it hidden. I don't know what it is. And yes, this happens in my own family. And I'm looking at my own family members by looking at my kids. And then I step back and go, was I that kid in high school? Because how do I have a right to say anything to my kid if I was that kid? What changed me? What helped me? And that's the process I want to use for my own kids. Why are you afraid to share Christ with your friends? It's the coolest thing ever. They're wired differently than a maniac father. It's a little different. I'm looking at it that way, okay? Because if it's any other way that they're wired differently, then it has to do with this thing, that I'm just going to be quiet about Christ because I'm afraid I'm going to be rejected. That fear comes from something. Then I have to deal with it differently. I have to go at it differently because we're stumbling in our faith. That's the next one. Stumbling. One of the reasons is because we can't focus on God. I'd rather look cool. My body language is cool. I hide behind a guitar. I hide behind my style of dress. I hide behind this sport. I hide behind my money. I hide behind my golf cart. I hide behind my marriage. I hide behind my things. I hide behind my family name. Whatever it is you're hiding, and you're stumbling as a result, and I wonder what he thinks. I wonder what she thinks. Your head is bobbing all the time about what other people think. You're looking over your shoulder, and all of a sudden, where you had something resolute going, it's gone because I'm worried. I'm worried, you know? Society may think of me weird. There's companies even on this island that will hire you or not hire you based on how you handle yourself in social circles. They'll test you out socially before they hire you. So that pressure to perform is there. But the real you isn't, because you can't relax. You want the job. It's hard. For kids, it's like coming back from a concert last night. God met us. We heard from him. We had a chance to receive him. I did. And as a result, all hell breaks loose for the next 2 weeks at school. There's pressure on me. Everyone's calling me names. It's not worth it. I've got my salvation, and now I just need to morph. Because I don't want this. And as a result, we stumble in our faith. As I drive up around Three Palms and various other dark places after sunset, there's people of all ages just boozing it up. There's all kinds of stuff going on. The students around here and everywhere for that matter. I'll tell you right now, I'm not a coffee drinker. For the most part, I hate the taste of alcohol. But I look at... I got a student this week that I'm talking to about this. A neighbor called and said, this is what's going on with my neighbor teenager. These kids are not doing this because they love the taste of beer. Okay? They're not doing this because they love the taste of what they're drinking. They're doing it because everyone's doing it. Does that make sense? When we're as adults doing something that's just not right for what we're feeling, we've gone over the top, in other words. We're not doing it because of what we feel like. We're doing it because this is what's acceptable. This is what's going on. Everyone else is doing this, and they're freaking out that they're going to stand out in a crowd, or the music's going to stop playing, or all the golf carts are going to come to a halt. Whatever it is, I'm going to stand out, and everyone's going to look at me, and as a result, loser, loser, the label. And we think that's going to happen. There's this fear of rejection. I remember at age 17, I gave my heart to Christ. When I noticed a kid who had a mother who was a prostitute and no dad, and did his own everything, laundry, car payments, taxes, his own insurance for his car, grocery shopped, his clothing. This kid was amazing. At age 15, 16, I got to watch him. At age 17, I befriended him. I received Jesus as a result of him. We windsurfed out to a little island together. He kind of was tagging along in a two-foot little dinghy boat that I towed out there. And we started messing around doing stuff, and he knew I was struggling. And he was like, man, you are so scared of stuff. I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm going to do in college. I don't know what I'm going to do in my life. I'm 1 year away from making big decisions. He's like, you got a lot up here with your head knowledge on your Savior, but you have nothing down here. You're in panic mode. Your filter is holding in the most incredible opportunity to trust someone bigger than you with your issues. It never made it down to your heart. And this kid's talking to me this way. I'm like, who are you? His name was Scott. And I hung out with him long enough, and I'll never forget the stories he told me of his feeling of being rejected. No matter how perfect I thought Scott was, this kid went to school every day with the fear that his story might be rejected. And it was a Christian school. There's the zinger. I want to give you some action steps that'll cause you to be free. A good friend of mine said he read an article once that said, make rejection your friend. And my buddy said it was the dumbest article he's ever read. Make bitterness your buddy, sadness your sister, and we'll have a whole dysfunctional family of emotions, he said. Unbelievable.